Our next recipient, you know, Veterans for Peace was started in 1985, but there's always been Veterans for Peace, because war makes some of us become warriors for peace. And one of the great warriors that this country produced in this last 50 years is someone who died recently. So I'd like to bring up John Shuchard, who is a friend of Philip Berrigan, to present an honorary membership award to Kate Berrigan, his 21-year-old daughter. John and Kate.
Well, it's my great privilege to present this honorary membership to Katie, representing her family. First, I know that we send the mother and father of Rachel, and Katie, we send your family our heartfelt condolences. We thank you from the bottom of our hearts for being with us, as we know it's not easy to revisit and remember and recall a grief so deep and a loss so enormous, and the recognition of the mighty power of an individual life that's absolutely irreplaceable. So that first. And I recall this morning that Philip Berrigan, like Francis of Assisi, and we're in San Francisco, and Father Vitale spoke about Francis as a survivor of heavy combat, and Phil was too, and they came out of that slaughter to dedicate the rest of their lives to the abolition of war. And it's Philip Francis Berrigan, born the day after Gandhi and the day before Francis on October 3rd. And I think it should be noted that since Phil was the first Catholic priest arrested in the civil rights movement, in the freedom movement, and his entry into a draft board in October of 1967, in which he was regarded as one of four rather eccentric, maybe unbalanced individuals and should go and plead for the mercy of the court. And the week before he was to do that and to be sentenced, he joined with nine others and burned 300 A1 draft files at Catonsville. And from that time on, there wasn't a day in his life that he wasn't either on trial, in prison, on bail, underground as a fugitive from injustice, or in the catacombs preparing for the next witness and the next deed to disarm and abolish nuclear weapons. Not a day in 11 years in prison and 15 years and more separated from his beautiful children and wife because of these unjust imprisonments for the simplest, most easily understood acts of nuclear disarmament. Resolution awarding posthumous honorary membership to Philip Berrigan, and then we're going to ask Katie to speak to us as well. Whereas Father Philip Berrigan was a priest and a civil rights activist, a husband, a father of three, and a fighter for freedom and social justice, and whereas communitarian Philip Berrigan and like-minded friends built a nonviolent movement based upon the imagery of beating swords into plowshares, and whereas neighbor Philip Berrigan lived in community at Jonah House, the Baltimore home of his family and the plowshares movement, and whereas witness Philip Berrigan kept a consistent and persistent vigil against violence during the 8 decades of his life, and whereas war resister Philip Berrigan was a favorite target of J. Edgar Hoover and his abusive FBI, And whereas inmate, Philip Berrigan frequently resided within the dwellings of the United States penal institutions as a political prisoner of conscience. And whereas seeker of truth, Philip Berrigan was an implacable inspector of the U.S. arsenal of weapons of mass destruction, calling attention to their inherent evil nature. And whereas activist Philip Berrigan symbolically confronted the nation's nukes with small hammers, vials of blood, and courage, whereas Counselor Philip Berrigan and companions struggled against the immoral Vietnam War, liberated the Catonsville Draft Board records, and whereas infantryman Philip Berrigan served during World War II in Normandy in the Battle of the Bulge, and whereas teacher Philip Berrigan is an example to the younger generation coming of age, and whereas Philip Berrigan, a lifelong veteran for peace, a hero, and an inspiration to those who follow in the cause of peace, and whereas it is with sorrow, regret, and gratitude that we as Veterans for Peace mourn the passing of our friend Philip Berrigan on December 6, 2002. Therefore, let it be resolved that in order to honor and commemorate his remarkable work and life, Veterans for Peace below bestows posthumous honorary full membership to our brother and comrade, Phil Berrigan, who continues to wage peace.
Thank you, John. Thank you all. I'm so moved and honored and humbled to be here with all of you, with Cindy and Craig, with all of the veterans and friends and supporters who are giving their lives working for peace. Yeah, my father was diagnosed with cancer of the liver and kidney last year during the first week of October, the week of his 79th birthday, and died 2 months later on December 6th, and we buried him on December 9th. And I'd like to start just by reading a couple passages from his autobiography, Fighting the Lamb's War. The first goes like this. Resistors cannot persist and survive without community. Sooner or later, they will be frustrated and crushed. That's why we invested so much time, effort, and money into starting Jonah House. We wanted a place where people could share meals and ideas, study scripture together, and support one another through the long haul. When friends went to prison, we would care for their children. When they left jail, we would welcome them home. If someone was upset or depressed, we would listen to their problems, give them a hug, let them know we loved them. We tried to be a loving family, committed to the spirit and the reality of nonviolent resistance. And I think that passage speaks to what was his life's work. In addition to the higher profile actions, the Catonsville draft file burnings and the plowshares actions. His work was often just very much at home, building community, supporting people, talking over those ideas, trying to figure out in a collective process how we can make this world a better place, trying to bridge that alienation that this culture is so good at fostering in us. And in the weeks before his death, that spirit was very present at Jonah House. People from the community, from the wider circle in Baltimore, people who had lived at the house many years ago, were all brought back by his dying process. And we were in that house, you know, 20 to 30 of us for about 2 weeks, just being with each other and being with him. And that spirit was so beautiful and so healing for all of us. And I think he also felt that he had come to some sort of healing in the days before his death. And it was because of that community. So another passage is about the Plowshares movement. The Plowshare movement began, and it must continue, because the government has no intention of disarming its nuclear arsenal. Atomic weapons protect the rich and powerful. That's why they were designed, built, tested, and deployed. That's why the establishment is willing to threaten other countries and our own people with atomic annihilation. The biblical view of the law, the courts, and the state is profoundly radical. The Bible looks upon the state as a kind of rebellious artifice. It is spurious, a human creation in rebellion against God. In the Old Testament, when the first state is proposed in the person of Saul, the first king of Israel, God tells the prophet Samuel that this project spells rejection of God. The state and its legislation are in rebellion against or rejection of God. Its courts are a human fabrication, cannot promote justice and peace. They are founded in violence and legalize violence. The state holds together through police power against the citizenry. The state, conceived in violence and backed by violence, will never achieve true peace. Plowshares activists maintain that there are two great historical commentaries on the law. First, Christ was condemned in accordance with law. The Judean leadership told Pilate that, according to their law, Jesus must die for declaring himself the Son of God. Our Lord was completely innocent. He spent his life teaching the good, healing the sick, and feeding the hungry. He preached nonviolence, urging his followers to love their enemies. Second, in our day, the law legalizes nuclear weapons. Any weapons. The slaughter in Hiroshima and Nagasaki 53 years ago was legal. The spread of nuclear weapons has been legal. Atomic warfare that threatens to spawn a nuclear winter destroying all life on Earth is legal. The poisoning of millions of human beings and the contamination of our air, food, and water supplies is legal. And I think that's particularly relevant this weekend, the 53rd anniversary of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And I think it's particularly important that we're all here together strategizing for how to take this struggle forward, how to build this movement, how to, you know, keep this community going, strengthen it, make it larger. And so up until the time he died, Dad was continually searching for that connection and that movement building and community building for this nonviolent revolution that he spent his life trying to bring about. And he writes, "But why am I so certain that the revolution isn't over? After all, I'm told, the 60s are dead. The left is in disarray. The peace movement is an anachronism. Revolutionaries are dinosaurs, extinct without our even knowing it. My justification for nonviolent revolution stems from what I and other Plowshares activists believe is fact, that Christ embodies God. This is God's will. God determines that the human family will become an order of justice and peace. The Bible is very clear about that. It's mentioned in the Beatitudes of Matthew and Luke. Armies will be disbanded and war outlawed. Cities will decline as people become less dependent on buying and selling. Economics will be revolutionized. Needs rather than wants will be paramount. In a capitalist society, economics defines life. In a just society, justice, love, caring, cooperation will prevail. Politics and religion, the same thing, will strive for the regeneration of the human family. The means for making this vision real is nonviolent direct action, like Dad tried to do, like Rachel Corey did. Civil disobedience or divine obedience. Nonviolent direct action carries the truth of justice and love into the marketplace, where it confronts social, political, and economic injustice. It witnesses against the darkness of the way we treat each other. Civil disobedience diminishes individual narcissism, egotism, and solipsism. It enables us to resist being cogs in the engine of oppression. Our choice is clear. We act to recreate the political order, or we solidify the old order of violence and death. So in thinking about coming here, I was trying to put all of this in some context, and I stumbled across a book by my Uncle Daniel called Lamentations, and it's about the book of Lamentations in the Bible. And the background for that is that in the aftermath of September 11th, he was trying to make some sense of this, of the events of the World Trade Center bombings and the Pentagon, the hijackings, and then also the U.S.'s response, the bombings of Afghanistan, and the detentions, the assaults on civil liberties, the Patriot Act, everything that we've been talking about this weekend. And he picked up the Book of Lamentations, and in the introduction he writes about that being the story of Jerusalem's ruin and downfall because of its sins, because of the sins that it had committed against God and against the other people in the area. And then Lamentations also as the story of the path to rebirth of Jerusalem. And through it all, he writes, there's a mindfulness, a memory, constant reminders of what was, of the glory of Jerusalem, you know, the beauty, the fact that it was a Mecca for everybody, a center of commerce, beautiful temples, a religious center. He writes that memory heals. It confers the will to endure. And so throughout Lamentations, the poet is remembering what was, trying to make sense of it all, and trying to find a way to continue. So I'm so glad that we're here all remembering together the abuses of our government that are committed in our name, in Palestine, in Iraq, in Afghanistan, in Hiroshima and Nagasaki 53 years ago, the arms race that's been continuing ever since then. Beginning from the history of this country with the extermination of Native peoples, wars of conquest, slavery. So let's remember those. Let's remember our earth that's suffering through it all. The beauty of our earth that gives us hope. And let's remember our heroes, those who have fought for truth and justice. People like Rachel Corrie. People like Sojourner Truth, Mother Jones, Dorothy Day, King, Gandhi. Let's remember, let's use this memory well. Let's share it with others. Let's let it inspire action. Let it give us strength to endure. Thank you all so much.